Mr. Abish, Reel 8. Could you describe how you and the other boys in the camp organised or arranged your expeditions to get more food?
Well, that was only mainly on Sunday when we didn't work. Well, I used to go and visit the other boys' block. My block was number 18, but the other blocks, I think, was in the 30s, which was quite further away from us, because this is where most of the boys that I still met knew, and all my friend, you know, what I mentioned before, has been in that particular block. So what we used to do is to hang around outside the kitchens, and somebody knew somebody that works in the kitchen, and so if we can manage to volunteer to give a hand to wash the barrels or the sinks at all, any kind of menial jobs, and then either organize some food or get some food.
How could you actually do that inside the kitchens?
Well, inside the kitchen, there was all a question either there weren't any bees there, and what I mean by bees, you know what I'm saying, there were nice chaps, then it got along very well. So it's a question mainly as to get in. Once you got in, you got no problems.
People would just
wherever there's food laying there, I mean, if there's food about, you get it.
Turn a blind eye.
Yeah, of course, because that's the whole idea, coming to help them. Right, it wasn't to do with capos, it wasn't to do with SS, it was to do with the prisoners themselves who worked in the kitchens.
What food were you able to take?
Mostly bread or soups. Nothing, you know, luxury. There was no luxury food.
No. Could you tell me how the camp changed towards the very end before you left?
As I explained, when we arrived, apparently, to me, it looked like a holiday camp compared to the previous camp I was in Fürstengruber. But as we were there for a while, things were getting worse and worse. There was getting a shortage of food now, and food wasn't, except the bread again that you could eat, but otherwise I wouldn't have felt faint in the tunnel working, because I didn't have enough food. And the idea of me going to hospital originally to get a week off was for that idea.
Can you remember how rations actually did reduce? Did certain things just were not presented anymore? It was just
what
less
I mean
of the same?
Is, it's like anywhere else. If it's plenty, everybody's got more, then you get a bit more. Even if you don't get it from the ration side, but you get it from other people who help you. But once there is a shortage, if it's a famine, then very few people can give you even if they can't spare anything, you know? I mean, there's always people who got better position in the camp, and they have more than you have when you go out to work and you haven't got the chance to organize food. So in that respect, you know, it was getting worse.
Were there any other changes that you can think of?
The atmosphere was getting a bit sick. You know, it's, you know, heavy.
Can you explain what you mean by that?
Well, obviously, I didn't know that obviously the front was getting nearer, or there must have been the Americans are coming closer or something, so it was getting more difficult, and we still didn't know very much about it.
Did the guards, their dealings with you change as a result of this increased pressure?
Well, in this particular camp, you know, as we walked out of the camp, really, there wasn't very far, but we walked into the tunnel, to the factories, you know, where they were making the rockets. They escorted us mostly into units, into each sections, where you worked into different sections, you see. But otherwise, like the civilians, they most probably didn't have any food either, because they didn't look very happy.
Was there an increase in violence and things like this as a result of the pressure that they felt?
Well, from the SS, they looked pretty subdued at the time. If anything, the capos were more tougher.
Could you describe your transit from this Dora to Belsen?
Well, I think it must have been the third week in March that decided to evacuate the camp. Again, a certain amount of people have stayed in the camp. and the majority were going. So I remember it was like chaos. Everything was open, the magazines, food magazines. I went into one magazine, I found Red Cross parcels, damaged Red Cross parcels. I found like a box, like a shoe box, white box, and there was a crumbled cake. It must have been months and months old, but it was there in the magazines. So we ate whatever we could, and I think that they gave us also a loaf of bread for the journey. With a tin of sort of meat, no, not meat, it's sort of like a fat thing, you know, that the Germans used. So then we took us to the station Nordhausen, and we were put in wagons covered over with tarpaulin. Some were actual wagons, closed wagons, but not passenger trains.
How many were put in each wagon?
I can't know exactly, not as many as at the time when we came evacuated Auschwitz because of the smaller ones. And I'd say about 50, 60 people. Because my friend and I actually got ourselves a straightaway position on the edge of the side. And there was a plank missing, and our legs were sticking out, dangling out all the way along. And all the fellows who were sitting on that side were all having the legs dangling out. Everywhere on the station was trains full with tarpaulin covered rockets, you know, covered up rockets. So eventually we left, we started moving, we were going along, and this time we didn't eat the bread up. My friend and I decided we're going to cut a slice a day. And in the same evening, funny enough, it was pitch dark and there was air raids going on. And my friend and I were sort of asleep. And when we woke up early in the morning, none of us on the row were left. They were all absconded. They all went through, you know, escaped. And when the SS got to know about it, there were two in each corner of the wagon.
They actually so four. They were inside,
sitting in the corners. And they asked us, what happened, where have they gone, what time did they go, where did they go? I said, I'm sorry, we are asleep, we don't know nothing about it. And they tried to drill us, but we stuck to our story. I said, we never, so happens we didn't see them.
How did they drill you? Did they just ask you questions?
Just questions. What time did they go? How did they go? And all that sort of thing. The same as says later on, the source cutting a piece of bread again. They asked us, can we give him some bread? I said, that's our bread. We won't give it to you. So it didn't say anything because one was a Romanian. From Romania, they says. You remember, he spoke Romanian because my friend and I could speak a little Romanian at the time. And the other one was a real German, but it was a real nasty bit. The Romanian, I think he thought it's an end anyway, sort of thing.
Did they try and take the food by force?
No, they didn't. Well, it was the Romanian that asked us. I can't even remember whether we gave him or not. But later on, as we were going along, it was a few days later, we ended up in Hamburg. By the way, various people who were escaping, and especially in Hanover, sorry, not Hamburg, Hanover. We were in Hanover at the station, and there was an air raid going on. It was the middle of the day. And I saw through the thing that a lot of people started running away. And especially this other SS who was on my side, not the Romanian, starts running out and starts shouting, starts shooting, wherever he could see somebody running, you know. After a while, we're standing there, and there were some potatoes between the rails, and the Romanian SS asked me, can I go and get him some potatoes? So I went down to go and get him some potatoes. In the meantime, another SS man, you know, on guard there, starts shooting at me. And as I moved, the bullet, you know, hit the rails. I ran back into the wagon there, and I told the SS man, go and get it yourself. Go and get the potatoes yourself. I'm not taking any risks.
And what was his reaction to that?
The reaction there, he shouted, Hans there, or somebody there, can get me over a few potatoes from there. Because they did. Apparently they didn't get any rations. Okay.
What provisions were made for supplying you with water?
No, apart from the loaf of bread that we got when we left camp, there was nothing. We never got anything. We never got, there was no kitchens. There was no rations given out while the journey. But the fact that I'm saying that the SS themselves, some of them didn't have any food. Mm-hmm. It was getting chaotic there in Germany at the time, right?
Well, what conditions existed on the wagons then?
The wagons, you just sat there, right, like mummies. And I said we ate a piece of bread every day, but we didn't have any water or any hot drinks or anything like that.
Did many people die on this journey?
In this particular transport, I didn't see many people dying because of the fact that coming from Dora, they were more fit, you know, because the majority of people who weren't capable of working, who were, you know, the human wrecks, were already lost, you see, were already disappeared. And here the nationalities were far more mixed, starting from French to Poles, Ukrainians, Russians, Dutch, Belgians, you know, from very Italians. I mean, there was a completely different mixture of prisoners now.
Yeah. Were they all Jewish?
No, no. Here in Dora, as I mentioned maybe before, the percentage now of Jews were less and less. And as the time went along, there were less and less Jews left in the camps, apart from the Auschwitz area, which was originally mostly Jewish. I mean, most of them died in various transport and they died in the camps, and there was, you know, getting less and less Jewish population was much degraded now. Depleted, I should say.
What about lavatory facilities on the train?
As part from going to water, you know, maybe through the hall or something, but I don't remember even going to the toilet.
How long did the journey last?
The journey lasted on the train 8 days, with stops and stopping and going a bit, because if you look it up, the distance from Nordhausen to Bergen-Belsen is not all that great. I remember staying at least a day in Hanover itself by the station there on the side tracks. And of course, towards that time, there were all fears all the time on the air raids every night. I didn't see any actual bombing at the time. But I heard planes passing through. I didn't see them because we were undercover. But whenever the air raid, we didn't go out of the trains. Maybe, you know, majority of the SS may have been the ones not in our wagons, but outside the escorts, may have been hiding, but I didn't see them.
Were there times when you could get out of the train?
Well, if you want to take a risk, as I said, our feet were dangling out, and at night you want to sleep, where are you going to go to? You're going to an enemy territory, it's the same replica as you're actually inside the train. Well, being at that age, we didn't know geographies or anything like that. Maybe those other ones who escaped must probably knew where they were and where they are going, or what they're going to do.
What were you able to do on the train to pass the time or to keep morale up in some way?
Well, you were fairly weak, so morale, I mean, it was a question of trying to preserve your strengths rather than anything else, and just sit there where you were and just look on with the eyes what's happening around you.
Can you remember anything in particular that was happening
around you? Particularly when I remember passing through a station, I don't know where it was, and the next rail was like a passenger train full of women. Coming from Belsen, now I never heard of Belsen before, they were going away from Belsen. And it's silly to ask something. It's like asking somebody in London, do you know so-and-so? So you shout, you know, have you heard of my sister, you know, mentioning the name or anything like that, you know, and my brother, and my friend asking about his mother because he didn't have any sisters, you know, something like that. It's like asking somebody, a stranger in London, do you know so-and-so?
What happened when you actually got to Belsen?
We arrived outside Belsen because we marched from a station. I don't know which station it was. I haven't looked it up after the war. It couldn't have been Celle, because Celle is still quite a long way from Belsen. And from there, they unloaded us. And there was a lot of Hitlerjugend around there, I remember screaming and shouting about. and we were marched off to Belsen itself. When we arrived in Belsen, they looked like a huge, big three-story blocks. There must have been originally some military camps. There weren't barracks in the place that we were. So every few blocks there was like kitchens in the, you know, modern kitchens in the middle, right? And straight away, I think I got myself into, I got up in the third floor, and we were in bunks. There was no food whatsoever handed out. There was no rationing or of any kind, no breakfast, no supper, no nothing. So it was a question, go and find it yourself. And that we did. We tried to, where the kitchens were, there was the cellars. And in the cellars were either potatoes or sugar grapes. That's about all. So a lot of hundreds and hundreds milling around each entrance to those kitchens, and at your own risks, like playing Russian roulette, because not exactly when I was there it happened. When I saw it further away, the SS used to wait and used to throw hand grenades, you know, into the crowd, you know, to disperse them. Well, I got a couple of sugar grapes, you know, and that's had sort of a crude knife, you know, like a blade from a. That's right. We used to have spoons. One side was a spoon, and the other side we sharpened it to make it into a knife, the end part. And this is how I cut the thing, the slices of that thing to eat.
Where did you get that spoon from?
Originally, you brought it from the camp.
From
yeah,
Dora.
This is something that you always had with you wherever you went. You had your own sort of spoon or sort of tool, sort of thing. In various camps, you had that.
Were they forbidden?
No, but this is a spoon you were eating with.
Could you describe the scene in the camp?
The scene in the camp is utter chaos. The fact there was no rationing at all. There was nothing given, no food, no soups, nothing. You just had to sort of fend for yourself. People milling around, a huge camp, it was 80-odd thousand people. Must probably more transport coming in every day, swelling the ranks. Lots of SS around, that all they're trying to do is to stop you from trying to get some food, because they're most probably interested in one thing, die anyway. I met, you know, here and there a few people who weren't in concentration camp originally, who were first in the forced labor. Things and Jewish people, and I also met a friend of my father, actually was quite a senior comparison to me, and I met somebody who was non-Jewish from my hometown, who so I know his father was in the council, a member, and he must have been around 20, and I asked him what happened when they took us away from our town. He said, first they took you away and then they took us away to Germany to work, and now ended up here.
Were you able to help one another at all?
Well, very little help anybody can give each other at the time. Because either you risk your life to see if you can go into the kitchen and get those few potato peels or whatever it was that you could think. And if I once got hold of dirty potato peels, there was sort of people with fires there, and you just cooked it in a little cup with the dirty water in. That was a delicacy. Comparison to anything else, I've seen people cut the grass and cooking the grass, and I mean people eating all kind of filth. But I didn't. I rather went hungry than to eat that, because maybe I don't know what sense I had, but that's the sense I had not to eat those things.
What were they eating?
Really, I mean, from something that must have probably been stale or rotten. Or anything like that wouldn't your stomachs couldn't possibly take that. I mean, it's all right to fill it, but you wouldn't survive it.
You mentioned the camp was in chaos. Was there any attempt made by the SS to count the prisoners and to have any sort of camp routine?
Well,
at all?
What we had the second week, I think it was, because in this camp, from what I've heard, I mean, I didn't count the people. From what I understood, there was about 88,000 people in this particular camp. Because I didn't know there was another camp next to us, not far from us, where there was the barracks. You know, it was mostly the Jews, you know, with all the typhoid and the really bad cases. where there were women and men there. But now in our camp, there was only men. Of nationality, every nationality you can think of from Europe, right? Right from Greece, from Belgium, from Holland, from Russia, from Poland, from France, from all over the place, Italians, everybody, including the few Jews that were managed to survive to end up in Belgium, in our particular case. The other case there, so they announced that all the Jews should come to the Appellplatz. So obviously some of the blocks must probably have been mixed, especially mine where I was. There was a lot of Ukrainians there. So when they heard that, no, I never went out, even if they called us. So my friend and I, the Ukrainians said, Jide, you know, Jew, out. You know, so we come to the Appellplatz, we're surrounded with machine guns there. So we thought that's it. Because as far as the orders were, no Jews should ever survive this anyway. Like it happened in the previous, in other camps, you know, that they shot them in the, those that couldn't be transported were shot. Otherwise, it was going on completely, so every day we were then going back to the block and then back next day again. And in the meantime, there were Hungarians there who were originally been disarmed by the Germans, soldiers, and then in the last week or so, towards the end, they actually had rifles, you know, and also helped to guard the camp, the inside. And
why would they give them rifles?
Well, most probably some of the SS must probably have been taken to the front, get them closer, I suppose. And what actually happened, one particular incident, I was going around the back, around the block, and there was an SS officer with his holster, the gun, the holster open in the back, and an Ukrainian went in the back of him, and I was just behind him. He ran towards him in the back, sneaked behind him, pulled out the pistol from the holster, and shot him in the back, killed him. Of course, immediately, I couldn't escape fast enough, and I was caught and asked what happened. So I thought, the man did that, but I don't know who it was. He ran that way. Didn't do anything to me about it. I didn't do it.
They didn't question me more closely?
No, because they're trying to chase. As I said, themselves was very chaotic there.
You mentioned that you went to the Appellplatz. How many times a day were you meant to go to the Appellplatz?
Well, in this particular day, we used to stand there for a few hours there. Obviously, there must have been an order to kill us, but the orders must probably have been implicit enough to somebody to carry it out.
And were you called there frequently during a single
Well, the
day?
Last week, we practically every day. It was only the Jews that were assembled at the Appellplatz. And of course, we thought, well, that's it. We've had it.
Was there much friction between the nationalities in the camp?
Mainly between the Ukrainians and the Jews, because the Ukrainians have really got a blind hate. The fact that most of them, quite a lot of them fought with the Germans, but those, a lot of the Ukrainians somehow got into concentration camp, but really most of them were taken away to do all kind of work in various factories in Germany. Some of them must probably done something wrong or something. They ended up in concentration camps. But they're very, very, very bad element. And very, very cruel.
Can you give any instances of where you saw this happening?
Matter of fact, I can compare the cruelty from them equals maybe more to the SS in many instances. In this particular case, in this block, I ended up with my friend more with the Ukrainians there. So when they used to call the Jews to call to the to go to the Appellplatz, which means to gather there, they used to pull us out from the bunks and said, "Jew, out!" You know, instead of trying to help us, you know, to protect us, they did the opposite.
Was there any attempt, because they were prisoners? Was there any attempt to fight them off?
Well, they were the majority now there. So it was not a question of that. We just carried along. You don't start with those, you know, got no chance.
What facilities were there for washing and keeping yourself clean?
Well, there wasn't anything particular there. You just, I don't think we washed. There wasn't the normal routine where you came into a camp and you'd been deloused or anything like that. That wasn't when we came into Belsen. itself. I mean, there was completely chaos there. There was no organization except many guards milling about, you know, SS and so on, and highly tensed atmosphere, but no food was given. The scores and scores of people were dying every hour of the day. There were sort of pits there and on the side, and just people couldn't walk. They were just laying on the grounds. Not even inside the blocks. They were just laying outside dying.
Was there any attempt made to remove them to either a hospital or...
Nothing like that. Not under those conditions there. They were just dying. That's what they wanted you to do.
What was your condition by this time?
Getting very, very weak. You see, there's some days my friend and I could hardly stand up now, upright, because we were very, very weak. Naturally, the front is getting closer, but we are also, more and more people are dying because the conditions got worse and worse because, of course, the whole organization collapsed, except for the perimeter outside the camps must probably regard it strongly still. Now we're getting nearly closer to the time, you know, which was Saturday, the 14th of April, where at night, around the, you know, from 10 o'clock at night onwards, you could hear cannons, you can hear long distance guns continuously going on. And it must have been around the forests, around Belsen. And we still didn't know how far anybody is, where the Allies are. And then in the Sunday morning, early in the morning, it was all like complete quiet. Everybody was in the blocks and nobody was out. They wouldn't allow you out. And I could see through the windows that the SS were wearing Red Cross bands around on the arms, and including also the Hungarian soldiers. And that morning, and then around after 10 o'clock, start milling around outside, and there seemed to be less and less of the SS, you know, milling about. And somebody shot at 1 o'clock, apparently, in the same day, the first tank entered our area of Belsen, you know, this particular camp. And, of course, everybody rushing towards the thing, those who could manage, even crawling or anything. And the first British soldiers came in. I remember the first words which was translated were, "We don't know, we haven't got any food with us, we don't know whether we have to retreat still, the war is still on, you know, and it's very little we can do at the moment."